Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
I was looking at social media earlier today, and Twitter was kind enough to provide me with the reassurance at the top of its What's Happening section, trending section, that there was not widespread voter fraud in the 2020 election. I think I get a reminder like that at least once a day from Twitter. I sometimes wonder, does that mean there was no problem with the 2020 election? No problems with that election? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about media, big tech, the Democratic Party, and the 2020 elections. Molly Hemingway is our guest. She's a Fox News contributor, senior editor of The Federalist, and author of the new book, Rigged, How the Media, Big Tech, and the Democrats Seized Our Elections. Molly, welcome back.
It's great to be here with you.
For a little context, remind us how the media, big tech, and the Democratic Party responded to the unexpected election of Donald Trump in 2016 and his administration in general.
Yes, the 2016 campaign was one in which everybody was assured there was no way that Donald Trump would win. And when he did win, it was really alarming to media, big tech, and others. And they sort of openly said that they would never let such a thing happen again. Big tech in particular felt guilty that they had allowed then now President Trump to speak freely instead of having it mediated through the corrupt partisan press. And so they decided to take a much heavier hand in mediating what he said and controlling what people could learn about issues of the day. And they set about doing that through algorithmic manipulation, censorship, deplatforming, and investing heavily in voter efforts targeted toward their political allies in the Democratic Party.
Some say that the 2020 election was stolen. You say it was rigged. What's the difference?
I think more than anything, what's important is that people actually just learn and talk about what actually happened. They, you know, we use these words and people use them as an excuse to not talk about the deeper issues. I love the title Rigged because I think that explains how all of these different systems were put into place to ensure not just that Donald Trump wouldn't win re-election, but also just to help various allies, political allies of establishment figures. And so that describes everything from our corrupt press, which engages in, you know, invent fake news, they suppress real news stories, our tech oligarchs who kind of oversee the country currently and how much control they have over what people can and can't know, but also about all the changes that were put in place to our election laws across the country. This was a coordinated, concerted effort to loosen up laws and regulations governing how people vote, to intentionally make it messy. Sometimes those were handled in a constitutional and legal manner, which requires them to go through state legislatures. More often than not, they were not handled that way. And so you have issues of, you have various partisans suing state officials to get them to change the processes by which ballots are handled, and those state officials just kind of agreeing to it without it going through the legislature, even though they have profound effects on how votes are tallied or counted. And then there's also the thing that I think is most explosive in my book about how Mark Zuckerberg, who's one of the world's wealthiest and most powerful men, funded the private takeover of government election offices, predominantly in blue areas of swing states.
What did we learn from Molly Ball's February 2021 Time Magazine story, The Secret History of the Shadow Campaign?
In her article, and Molly Ball is someone who has very close ties with Democrats. She wrote a fawning biography of Nancy Pelosi, and she has a lot of access to Democratic operatives. And in her piece, she describes what she calls herself a cabal of powerful elites who conspired together to ensure that Donald Trump wouldn't win re-election. Now, she frames this as a fortification of our election system. I prefer a rigging of the election system. But she shows how all sorts of things that you might not have even realized were connected to this cabal, including decisions about when to riot and when not to riot. So even that summer of violence that we all endured, you know, where they attack the White House and they attack federal courthouses and they're setting buildings on fire and they're destroying businesses and dozens of people are being killed and billions of dollars of damage is being incurred, even that was something that this powerful cabal was able to turn on and turn off. And she says in her article that tech platforms and media companies handled what information you could and could not know. They'd made a decision that they wouldn't let Republicans reveal negative information about Democrats during the campaign. And of course, we saw how that happened. And it's just a fascinating article. She has a very gauzy, positive version of events. But I think most people who read that, who weren't in her political party, read that with just abject horror and thought, we knew this was happening, but to have them kind of almost brag about it is just awful.
A big story coming out of your research and reporting is Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg's role in the 2020 elections. How would you summarize what he was up to?
Yes, so Mark Zuckerberg, one of the world's wealthiest and most powerful men, gave $419 million to two left-wing groups. Then those groups, and these are left-wing groups staffed by Obama officials, they gave the money to election offices, you know, the offices that handle voter registration, ballot design, vote counting. And that money was purported to be for COVID relief, when in actuality, it was then given to all these other left-wing groups to staff up these offices, handle voter outreach to targeted Democrat groups, and make sure that Democrats were able to vote. Now, this is the type of stuff that if you're doing in the private sector or in a private campaign is totally typical. What was different about 2020 is they did it from the government office themselves, giving them access to sensitive voter information and things that normally you would have been administered in a scrupulously nonpartisan manner. Those Zuckerberg funds went to both Republican and Democrat counties, but when you look at on a per capita basis and where they spent their money, researchers have now shown that it was dramatically more per voter spent in Democrat areas than Republican areas, and that it had profound effects. Researchers showed, for instance, that it gave Biden 200,000 more votes in Texas than he would have had otherwise. And you might think, well, Donald Trump won Texas safely. What's the big deal? That's true, but Ted Cruz won it by only about 218,000 votes. The ability to get that additional squeeze of votes by embedding into the election system can have dramatic effects, not just for the presidency, but for Senate and House control as well.
What other role did social media play in shaping the outcome of the 2020 election?
Social media was so helpful to Donald Trump because it enabled him in 2016 to go past the media who hated him and speak directly to the American people. By 2020, social media was engaged in massive censorship and suppression of information so that if Donald Trump said something about mail-in balloting being less secure than in-person voting, which is true, by the way, they would say, this is not true. They would censor his tweets. They would censor his posts. They would limit the distribution. Most dramatically, I think, you look at not just how this affected Donald Trump himself, but effective message makers on the right who were making memes, making fun of the media, or making fun of Joe Biden. Those would be suppressed. The whole information landscape was rigged in favor of leftist messages and against conservative messages. And then most dramatically, that takes place with the suppression of the story about the Biden family business in October of 2020.
I want to come back to that in a minute. How did the Democratic Party use the circumstances of the global pandemic to, in many ways, re-engineer the voting system in many places?
A lot of people think, oh, well, we had to change the voting, the way we vote in 2020 in response to the global pandemic. Whatever legitimate reasons there may have been to alter voting, which I'm less fond of than other people, the fact is that these changes were exactly what Democrats had been pushing for years, if not decades. And COVID gave an opportunity to exploit the situation to push through those reforms and those changes, and to do it in a rushed manner in the middle of the election, in the middle of the campaign, and without appropriate oversight. You saw literally hundreds of changes taking place throughout the country, whether it dealt with how long you could spend voting, to whether you had to verify that the person voting was actually a voter, to whether you had to show an ID to register to vote. All sorts of changes were happening, and it enabled a flooding of not just chaos, but tens of millions of ballots, which is important if ballots are how you win. So if you get more messiness and more ballots out there, it gives you more opportunity to control the outcome.
Molly Hemingway is our guest. She's a Fox News contributor and author of a new book, Rigged: How the Media, Big Tech, and the Democrats Seized Our Elections. When we come back, she says that the media suppressed and ignored a number of important news stories. We'll find out what they were and what false narratives did the media push. Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Truth, freedom, and vocation are the pillars of a Concordia University Chicago education. Through them, we form our students for lives of influence and service for the common good. This is the education American society needs right now. I'm Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, and I invite you to visit us to discover what it means for truth, freedom, and vocation to become the pillars of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. Molly Hemingway is our guest. She's senior editor of The Federalist, a Fox News contributor, and author of the new book, Rigged: How the Media, Big Tech, and the Democrats Seized Our Elections. Molly, you say that the media suppressed and ignored a number of important news stories during the presidential campaign. What are those stories?
In general, they did a very bad job of just covering the differences between major candidates. That's something that they've done for a long time, though. But it was dramatic in 2020. You didn't have an exploration of different policy ideas, so much as the media seemed to take the approach that they were in charge of running the Biden campaign, perhaps because he was not really out on the campaign trail himself. So they painted a picture of a highly competent person who had plans to fix everything that ailed the country. I think now that we're into this administration, we might have a different opinion about how competent Biden and his team are, how much they actually had any plan for anything from COVID to otherwise. But I think most dramatically, they suppressed important news that is important to the American voter in the form of what they did with the explosive details about the Biden family business. And the Biden family business, near as I think anyone can tell, is that people give money to members of the Biden family, whether that's his son Hunter, his brother James, or other assorted family members, because of how close they are to Joe Biden, who has always had a powerful position in the government. And it's unclear what they get in return for that. Now, that by any measure should have been explored heavily by the people who purport to call themselves journalists. Not only was it not covered, when details started coming out that some of what now President Biden had said about his family business, that those things weren't true, they dramatically suppressed and refused to cover that story, even though Americans have every right to know what is it that these oligarchs and foreign governments get in exchange for the money they give the Biden family. Because presumably that relates to some policies that Biden, whether he was a senator, vice president, or now president, was promising to implement, or that he did implement, or something else related to taxpayer dollars. And yet our corrupt media completely fell down on the job.
What I found just bizarre on a daily basis during the campaign itself, the kind of stealth campaign that the Biden team was running, where the candidate would just not appear, not interact with the press in any meaningful way. And what I found even more bizarre than the campaign itself, Molly, was the degree to which the media simply acquiesced to this as completely normal.
They treated a very abnormal candidacy as if it were normal because it was more important to have a narrative than to deal with reality. Now, normally, if you were having a candidate like Biden with his verbal slip-ups, with his, you know, hostility toward voters, you would see at least some coverage of it, even if you might expect liberal media to be somewhat friendlier to him than they would be a conservative candidate. But what we saw was something altogether different. They were just inventing narratives out of whole cloth, not just in terms of how they praised and adored candidate Biden, but how they also trafficked in, as per usual, fake news stories involving President Trump, whether that was the fake news story about Russia paying bounties for dead Americans in Afghanistan, or President Trump supposedly disparaging dead service members at Ain Marne Cemetery in France. That was a completely fraudulent story that had no supporting evidence and had like 24 people on the record rebutting it who were eyewitnesses. And yet the media ran wild with that. It ends up in a presidential debate. So it wasn't just how nice they were to Biden. It was also the invention or continued invention of fake news about Republicans.
You sat for several face-to-face interviews with former President Trump. What did you learn in those conversations?
Well, I did three interviews with him from shortly after he left office through right before he left Mar-a-Lago to head back up to New Jersey where he spends his summers. And we talked about all sorts of things from his presidency, how he handled who he picked for various positions, what he thought about various Republicans. For me personally, I thought that it might be interesting to talk to him post-presidency and see if he was different outside of the Oval Office, which is where I had previously interviewed him. And I found him remarkably the same as he had been as president, but it was still very helpful just to learn more about what he thought about the election, what he was doing about the various issues he raised, what he thought about the Republican Party going forward.
Some are going to read your research as a right-wing conspiracy theory. How do you respond to that, Molly?
It's not. For me, I wanted to know what was going on. I had been focused on problems with the election prior to the election, but I never really, you know, had other people seemed to be very concerned about what had actually happened on election day. So for me, I just wanted to report and research it myself and find out what had actually happened. I heavily cite every single claim that's made in the book so that people can do their own research. And, you know, I think you can argue, for instance, that it's okay for a tech oligarch to take over government administration of elections, but you can't dispute whether it happened. You can argue whether it's okay to change hundreds of laws during an election year that create a whole mess and chaos that you can't deny there was mess and chaos, but you have to deal with the reality of what happened. And you can say that it's okay that we live in a propaganda environment with censorship, you know, really gross censorship that you might have more expected in the Soviet Union than in a free country like ours, but you can't deny that it's happening. So I would rather people deal with the actual reality of what's happening with our elections. And it's important because democracy depends on the consent of the losers, not the winners. Winners always tend to accept election results. And so if you want people to live peaceably together, you have to run elections in a way that they're open and honest and transparent and free and fair. And so it's in everybody's interest to clean up some of these things. And there are all sorts of things that can be done, from banning the private takeover of government election systems to requiring identification when you vote, which is something that I think nearly everybody in the country agrees with outside of the media. It's like 85% of people polled agree that you should have an ID to vote. And so there are all sorts of common sense things that can be done to help restore credibility. And I think continued pressure needs to be applied to our big tech and media industries so that they understand that they are harming the country with how they are running things, and they need to clean it up.
How do you respond to someone that says, well, you know, things are going to go back to normal because 2020 was a pandemic year. 2020 was the last year of Donald Trump's very unusual presidency. It was these things amount to, we had to do it this once to make sure that the country got back on track. How do you respond?
I think that might have been the justification in people's minds for why they were willing to throw out all norms and standards for how to handle elections. But when they made those changes, they were permanent changes. So if you don't like the result of having no oversight of, you know, ballots as they're separated from envelopes, then you should keep things as they are. If you do want oversight and if you do want to have trust in elections, you have to get much more involved and make sure that your state legislature is caring about the integrity of the system and making it easy enough to vote without making it easy to cheat. And I think one of the things that's interesting is a lot of Americans actually are aware of this now in a way that they should have been aware 2 years ago. And so you have seen a lot of cleaning up of electoral systems. You saw legislatures look at some of these issues and decide that they can't continue. Governor DeSantis of Florida just this week was reminding people of some of the things that they had done to ensure further integrity of their voting system, which is now known after a few decades of problems as being pretty good. But they even had to ban that private takeover of election offices because there was a little bit of that funding even in Florida. And so everybody, no matter how good you think your elections are being run, should be aware and focused on it because it's very important.
What's at stake if the American electorate doesn't trust its election process? 1 minute.
I worry, actually, that we could have very serious consequences. You've had already in the Democrat Party people not accepting the legitimacy of a presidential election that they lost, or not fully accepting legitimacy, going back to like 1992. And so we already had this problem in the Democratic Party, and now you're seeing problems in the Republican Party. So it's just important that we all understand, you know, I think people can take losses, but they need to have some level of confidence in how the voting is happening. And it's also just important that we understand that our information environment is making things worse. In this country, we have always valued freedom of information as a way to pursue truth. You see that in our freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. And when we have this oppressive environment that tech oligarchs are subjecting us to and that the media are subjecting us to, it actually harms the body politic. And that's why people need to take it seriously, much more seriously than they are. We could lose a republic and all of the things that make our republic great if we don't take more action here.
Molly Hemingway is a Fox News contributor, senior editor of The Federalist, and author of the new book, Rigged, How the Media, Big Tech, and the Democrats Seized Our Elections. When you purchase Rigged at our website, a percentage of your purchase will support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Talk on Demand Archives, and look for Rigged by Molly Hemingway. Molly, thank you so much.
Thank you.
In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., Tim Gagline joins us, a focus on the family. We'll talk with him about the social impact of non-marital childbearing. Then it's This Week in Pop Christianity, William Hinn's teaching on Christian sinlessness with Pastor Chris Rosebro.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Unshaken from Psalm 16:8 is the theme for the 44th academic year at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and encouraging spiritual growth. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the support page. Or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.